Hi, everybody. My name is Ben, and welcome to Headcanon, the podcast dedicated to exploring the vast reaches of cinematic universes that never were and never shall be. Every week on this podcast, I select a movie at random from a carefully curated list of some of the weirdest and most obscure movies I've never seen. I watch and review it, and then I try to imagine what it would be like if I was given the opportunity to expand it into a soulless, cash-grab multimedia franchise. I pitch sequels, prequels, spin-offs, crossovers, gritty reboots, TV shows, video games, and even porn parodies, taking movies that never got the attention they deserved and giving them far more attention than they deserve. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. This is episode 30, or episode 10 of season 3. This is the last regular episode of season 3. And as with every last episode of a season, this is my choice episode, which means the intro I just gave there was a bit of a lie. I didn't pick the movie at random this week. I chose it deliberately. And also, I chose a movie that I've seen before. I haven't seen it in many years. I saw it when I was a kid. I don't remember anything about it. And I haven't watched it since, so I'm still in for a surprise either way. But it's a movie called Americathon. And I have kind of a weird journey with this movie in a couple ways. The only reason I know about it at all is because I'm a huge Elvis Costello fan and have been since I was a kid, which I guess is probably a little weird on its own that I was like 10, 11, 12 years old in the 90s and I was a fan of Elvis Costello, but I found him in the library. I think it was Trust was the album I found. It's still one of my favorite albums to this day. And anyway, my parents knew how much I liked Elvis Costello, and my mom found a movie that he was in called Americathon, and apparently he's only in it for like 5 minutes. I read an interview he did where he talked about he didn't remember anything about the movie either, just that they flew him out in first class, and that was fun. But anyway, that's why I know this movie. I don't even know. Maybe I didn't even watch it. I don't remember anything about it other than Elvis Costello's in it and John Ritter's in it, but I don't know if I actually sat through it. It seems like a movie I wouldn't have been able to appreciate just based on the premise and the fact that it's kind of a late 70s satirical comedy. I don't know that I would have been old enough to appreciate it at the time, so it's possible I watched like the first 10 minutes and just gave up. But I'm going to watch it today. But more to the point, the reason I want to watch it today, the reason I wasted one of my rare choice opportunities to watch Americathon as opposed to anything else, as opposed to the movie I intended to pick, which was a recent movie called The Evil Within, which was this crazy like horror thriller that was made by a meth-addicted billionaire, and it was like his last film. It was like, well, his only film, first and last, and a passion project before he died in the making of it. And it's got Sean Patrick Flannery from 90210 and Michael Berryman. Bunch of weird fucking shit in that movie, or at least looks like it. I haven't seen it. But I chose Americathon instead, because if you listen to an earlier episode of this podcast when I talked about Collision Course, an 80s movie with Jay Leno and Pat Morita in it, I looked up Jay Leno's IMDb, and I found out that he was in this movie, which I definitely didn't remember from if I even did watch it when I was a kid. And he's credited as Larry Miller, not the comedian Larry Miller, I assume. But then in parentheses it says, a.k.a. Poopy Butt. And this has fascinated me since I found this out. I've been just dying to know what does that mean? Why is he called Poopy Butt? And because I'm so fucking weird about this podcast now, it's like, unless it's like a new movie, I can't watch a movie and not podcast about it. And since I have this rule where I have to select the movie at random, it was like, well, I can't watch it and do it and like pretend it was random, like, because I could have gotten it for the comedy category, but I didn't. And like, what are the odds of out of the 8,000 movies I express an interest in Americathon and suddenly find it? No, there's no way I could do that without tipping the scales. So it was either use a choice space or I guess watch a movie for fun. Fuck that. So yeah, here I am, not watching a crazy meth-addled nightmare escape. Instead, I'm watching Americathon, starring John Ritter, directed by Neil Israel in 1979. Neil Israel, probably best known for directing the film Bachelor Party, which is not on my list because it's fucking Bachelor Party. Why am I going to watch that? The only reason I might watch it is there's a modern sequel to it. If you don't know, like, they did a straight-to-video sequel, and I'm assuming just like bought the rights to Bachelor Party. So I might do it as a double feature just to see what the stark differences are, which I assume are many. I don't think Neil Israel, if he's even still alive, had anything to do with that movie. If he directed it, I would be very surprised. But he does have a couple movies on my list. He has a movie called Tunnel Vision, which it's technically an anthology film, and I'm still not quite certain what I want to do with anthology films. I might even have it like its own category later on. I don't know. But it's like a TV show sort of thing where they're pitching TV shows or something to that effect, like a sketch film. It sounds like kind of like an 80s version, or I guess it would be 70s version of like Movie 43, though hopefully much better than that. And he also directed Surf Ninjas, the fucking movie where Rob Schneider, who I believe is like 30 years old, plays like a 15-year-old. And I want to say Leslie Nielsen is an evil ninja with magic powers. I've never seen it. I've seen stuff on it. My hesitation to do that is I think that's been done on, like, not necessarily Mystery Science Theater, but stuff like that, you know, online internet reviewers or critics or whatever have done it. So I want this to be for more obscure movies than that, but it's on the list. If I get Surf Ninjas, I'm going to fucking watch Surf Ninjas. And this isn't on my list, but when I was going over Neil Israel's IMDb, oh no, I guess, yeah, he would probably still be alive, unless he died in the last couple of years, because he has a very recent show, and I would never watch it, obviously, because it's a TV show. This isn't a TV show podcast, but much like Poopy Butt, I'm fascinated just to find out what the fuck this is. Apparently, he's a director on what looks like maybe a Disney Channel show called Dog with a Blog. That's a thing. Apparently, there's a TV show where, unless the title is somehow ironic or absurdist, the premise of the show is that there's a dog who writes a blog. And I have so many questions. Like, do people still even have blogs? I mean, technically, I have a Blogspot page for my podcast, but, like, I don't blog like, you know, like, you used to have, like, Zanga and, you know, MySpace and shit. I mean, is that even a thing anymore? And that's my first question. My second question is, why is a dog doing it? What does a dog have to blog about? How does a dog blog? Is he a super intelligent dog? Can he type? How does he type? Does he have a special keyboard? I mean, I might watch it for the podcast just because I can think of the world building for that, the cinematic universe for Dog with a Blog. I mean, that gets me on a whole new track of, like, do I include TV shows? Do I have a special segment for, like, maybe TV pilots or something? I don't know. Do I justify that just so I can watch Dog with a Blog? I feel like it ruins the whole premise of the podcast if I was going to say break that glass ceiling. That's the wrong metaphor to use. If I cross that bridge, that's probably a better one. So yeah, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'll think more on that. But anyway, Americathon, 1979, directed by Neil Israel. I'm going to pause the podcast here. I'm going to watch it, and I'm going to come back, and I'm going to tell you what I think.
We interrupt this theater for a bulletin from 1998, the year America ran out of gas, oil, and cash. Flash, people have stopped driving cars and started living in them. Flash, the president has sold the White House, raffled off the tomb of the unknown soldier, and moved into a rundown condo in Southern California.
Hi, United States of America.
I'm President Roosevelt. This is my cabinet and my old lady.
Flash, the city of San Diego has been bought by Mexico. Flash, the Jews and Arabs have joined forces to form the United Hebrew Republic.
Bad planning is why your country is in the toilet.
Her country is flat broke.
I know a way to raise money.
A telethon.
Taking up a collection before America's all gone. If this is a movie, it must be
an Americathon.
Ladies and gentlemen, a spectacular Americathon event, the first mother-son boxing match.
We could sell Cleveland, but nobody's buying. We could trade in all our cars, but nobody's driving.
And now, Meatloaf versus the last living automobile.
You gotta grab him by their TV screen.
Look at me, damn it.
Ooh.
I'm not a country, I'm not an office, I'm not a decorative seal, I'm a person. I'm a man who wants to make love to you.
Oh, you want to pop?
We got 30 days to save the nation.
Folks, do something. I'm dying. Call in, make a pledge.
Take it up, come collection before America.
If you call yourself an American, if you care about America, then see Americathon at your local theater before you see it happening in your own front yard. Americathon 1998.
I'm Chet Roosevelt, your president, and I love you.
The freeways are jammed now. Cars have disappeared from the scene. Cause going to work or to play, they use a whole nother kind of machine.
I'm back. I've watched Americathon from 1979, directed by Neil Israel, and for better and for worse, I can say that the mystery behind Poopy Butt has been solved. I mean, I can't even say I was disappointed or let down by it. I mean, it was never going to live up to what I had in my head as to what Poopy Butt could have been. Like, I was hoping it was a main character in the movie that, like, through the whole thing, he had poop in his butt, and people would point to him and go like, oh, that guy's poop in his butt. We should call him Poopy Butt. That's not what happens. And fuck it. Forget it. Before I get to the rest of the movie, I'm just going to explain this because I need to get it out of the way. Because as much as I thought it would be, this podcast is not going to be about Poopy Butt. I have so much more to talk about with this movie. Spoilers, I fucking loved Americathon. I'm recommending it to everyone. This is like one of the top tier of this podcast so far. But the Poopy Butt thing, it's in the context of a telethon, and they're doing all these sort of gimmicky acts, and one of them is a boxing match where a guy boxes his own mother, the first mother-son boxing match, and Jay Leno plays the son, and I don't know who plays the mom. I think she was a stunt woman, I think I read. But he's Poopy Butt because that was a nickname he had as a kid, and the mom, taunting him as they're about to fight each other, says, ah, Poopy Butt, you Poopy Butt. He's like, don't call me that, mom. And so it makes sense. It, like, logistically or narratively or diegetically, however you want to say it, like, I buy it. It doesn't come off as weird. It makes sense in the context of the film, and that is itself a surprise. I was waiting for it to be kind of just, like, out of nowhere. I was waiting for it to be sort of a non sequitur. Somebody just comes in and goes, hey, I'm Poopy Butt. But no, it matters to the story. No, it doesn't. But it justifies itself. I say that a lot, I feel like. I don't know. But more importantly, I know what it means now. I know what Poopy Butt's about. I'm not gonna, like, if I had gotten hit by a car before this, and I was, like, dying on the side of the road, like fucking Kevin Sorbo at the end of God's Not Dead, and, like, a priest comes by and he's like, do you want me to give you the last rites? Do you want me to, so you can go to heaven? I'd be like, nah, I don't give a fuck about that. But have you ever seen Americathon? Could you tell me what Poopy Butt was? But no, now I don't have to do that. Now I have time to get the last rites if I want. I probably still won't, but, you know, that's assuming I get hit by a car tomorrow, which, you know, now I'll be lucky. But anyway, Americathon. Let's start talking about this fucking amazing goddamn movie. Americathon, the premise is, it's set in what was then the future of 1998. This movie was made in, like I said, 79. And America is bankrupt. This was made right around the oil crisis. It starts with Jimmy Carter, and there's no reference to Reagan, even though I guess, because that was 1980, wasn't it, or was that 81? I can't even remember now, but I know that was around the same time, but there's no reference to Reagan, so I'm assuming that was before the presidential election. I actually have a conspiracy theory about that, though. I'll get to that later. But you have, like, Jimmy Carter's malaise speech and the oil lines and everything, and this is, I guess, an alternate history that starts after that point, where they literally fucking lynch Carter in the White House. Like, that's a thing. Like, that's one of the first jokes in the movie. It's like, yeah, people hated Carter so much they lynched him. And then, you know, you have, like, several, well, you only see one, but you assume there were in several presidential administrations in this new sort of dystopian world where we don't have any oil. People have to live in their cars now. Nobody has any money. And I guess America's bankrupt. And the new president in 1998, played by John Ritter, he's Chet Roosevelt is his name, and I guess he's sort of like the liberal Trump. He's a governor of California, and he's sort of, well, I guess he's young and charismatic, and Trump is neither young nor charismatic, but just the idea of, like, he's a dope and everybody knows it. I mean, and they get into a lot of, well, that's a big part of this movie, just how prescient it is. And it's even noted in a lot of the reviews that I read after I watched it, that it's, you know, it predicted a lot of things. And I'm going to say it right now. This is going to sound like hyperbole, but it's not. For me, this is up there, not in terms of the quality of writing or the crispness of it or the intelligence of it, but just in terms of the biting satire. It's up there with, like, Network and Idiocracy, movies like that. It's not as well made. It's not as well constructed or funny as those movies. I'm not going to say that, but just, you know, how incisive it is about our culture. It is to pop culture what network is to, like, news culture in terms of how it is applied to politics. And I stand by that. I mean, you might watch this and go, like, what the fuck is he talking about? I just watched a movie where Meatloaf fights a car and Jay Leno plays Poopy Butt. But, you know, no, this is up there with those. This is in the annals of film satire. Or maybe the annals of film satire. I don't know, especially with Poopy Butt. But you have the new president, Chet Roosevelt, and he's been keeping the country afloat through various sort of schemes and gimmicks and borrowing money from the richest man in America, who is a Native American. And I always thought, I read a premise of this somewhere, and I always thought it was the Native Americans literally, like, calling in their chits, like, you know, this was our country and we want it back and we're going to try to, you know, take advantage of the bankrupt United States. But no, it's just a guy who happens to be Native American. There's no real reason for him to be. I don't know if maybe there were more jokes about him re-inheriting his own land back in a previous draft or something, maybe. But he's the richest man in America because he bought Nike, and he changed it to the National Indian Knitting Enterprise. So it's still Nike, but it means something different. And he's the richest man in America, and he's calling in his debt. So in order to pay him back his $400 billion that he's loaned the U.S. government, at first they're going to auction off the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And there's a scene where, like, the cabinet is meeting, and John Ritter's there, and he's pitching this, and a guy, like, stands up and defiantly resigns as a result. You know, the thing that nobody in the Trump administration does? I'm going to talk about Trump in this episode a lot, because, I mean, there's so many, like, I listened to this podcast, The West Wing Weekly, where they talk about old West Wing episodes, and it's got Joshua Malina on it, and they always talk about Trump III moments, where something hits a little too close to home in a sort of ironic or reversal sense. But this, there was Trump all over this movie. Like, he calls everything incredible, and he has all these sort of catchphrases in this kind of coded language, and he's a Scientologist, which is a weird fucking thing. And I didn't know, I mean, I guess Scientology was around, I didn't realize it was big enough to be a comedic reference in a movie back then, but, like, he keeps talking about, like, we can't let our minds get in the way of our purpose, and all these, like I said, this coded language that he's communicating to a specific subset of his audience or his constituency. And he's so dumb. But in this case, again, unlike Trump, he, in that sort of lovable way that John Ritter was so good at. John Ritter is such a fucking underrated comic actor. I mean, obviously, he sadly passed away far before his time. But just, he is just so, he's charming and funny and dumb all at the same time. And he's not a likable character in the movie. You should hate him, but you can't not love him just because he's fucking John Ritter. Like, at one point, the Chinese are having daily tours through the Western White House, which is located in a condo where John Ritter and his much younger wife, again, Trump, they have to, like, sort of, you know, interact with the tour as it goes, and he says, as he's just walking by them, "Oh, I love Chinese food." Like, that's some fucking shit Trump would say now. That's not even satirical. Like, you know how we're living in this reality where it's indistinguishable from parody? But, like, this is the parody that is sort of like the control group now. Like, this is how what we see as what used to be satire and what is now just our horrible nightmare lives. And the fact that it comes from a critique of essentially liberalism, again, they fucking lynch Carter, this is where my conspiratorial mind gets in. Because you know about the October surprise, right? Where, you know, Reagan and Bush, they were on the phone with the Iranian hostage takers so that wouldn't be resolved until after the election, after the votes came in. They were like, yeah, go ahead and let them go. They literally colluded with foreign terrorists to win the presidential election. And it's fucking, nobody fucking talks about that shit. But it's like, I watch this movie and I'm like, this is all about, like, what a horrible world it would have been like if we never got Reagan. And I know that's not the case because it couldn't have been made with that in mind. Like, if the presidential race was even happening, it would have started much after this. So, but it just got my conspiratorial hackles going. But I mean, even with that, you have all the weird predictions that the movie is making that, I mean, a lot of them came true, like the Soviet Union is gone and China is a capitalist power, but it's done as a joke. Like, they have a Maoist restaurant or a fast food restaurant with a Mao burger or whatever, I forget what they call it, but... Or just that so much of our world, or the world of the movie, is dominated by reality television. I mean, it predicted a lot, and it just feels so prescient now. And that's been said before about the movie, but just to watch it, it's so stark and startling. But then there's other stuff that's, like, kind of crazily off, because it, I think it was meant to be. Like, at one point, Israel and Palestine at this point in the future have merged into the United Hebrab Republic, and they're united in their shared quest for world domination and their love of white women. And it's like, that's horrifying. Like, that's, like, so offensively un-PC. But it's a funny joke, and it's a funny joke mostly because George Carlin narrates this movie. Like, that alone, like, I say that you want to see it right now, right? And it's a weird thing, because I remember there was an early George Carlin HBO special where they kept doing these cutaways to cartoons, where he would narrate a cartoon sort of situation, and then they would animate it. And it feels sort of like that, like, they will constantly cut away to George Carlin, and he'll say, like, well, what happened to Great Britain in the intervening years? And that's a funny segment as well. They're going through how it's become so commercialized. There's a billboard for Sovereign Wipes, and it's the Queen Elizabeth holding toilet paper, and it's got a quote from her that just says, "It's soft on the bum." And just the sign game in this movie. I talked about this when I watched In God We Trust. The signage in this movie is fucking on point. There are so many hilarious little bits like that. Or just the Thatcher's Disco. That's what 10 Downing Street has become. Which, of course, I mean, Thatcher was gone by 98, right? And so George Carlin would just sort of pipe in with these things. Or, like, at one point they just show a picture of Mount Rushmore with one earring, and they just reference it as the first all-gay state, North Dakota. And it just made me miss George Carlin so much, just these little social jabs. And it's not, like, angry George Carlin, it's more the, like, the 70s, you know, more sober-minded George Carlin. But he's not actually in the movie, but the weird part is there is a character that he's referencing. Basically, it's like a How I Met Your Mother sort of thing, where he's the older version of a character played by Peter Reigart, who I don't know why they wouldn't have just made George Carlin play him. It would have made the movie much better. But again, Peter Reigart doesn't really add much to the movie. His character doesn't, at least, you know, as a character, he doesn't provide much. He provides more as a posthumous voiceover, or retrospect voiceover. I guess they don't say he's dead, but he's voicing over all this stuff, and the premise is Peter Reigart's character, who I guess ages into George Carlin, is brought in to manage a national telethon in order to raise the money to pay back the Native Americans, or rather the Native American. And so most of the movie is just the wacky acts of this telethon, and then interspersed with that you have a subplot where Fred Willard is the villain. He's made a secret deal with the United Hebrab Republic to sabotage the telethon, so they will default on the loan, so then they can buy it back, because the Indian guy doesn't want the country, he just wants his money. So if they default, he'll own the country that he doesn't want, so the Hebrab Republic's gonna buy it off him and invade. And that's all you really need to know as far as the plot, and it doesn't really count as a spoiler. So much of this movie is just in the little details and the jokes and the funny set pieces, and not all of them are hilarious, not all of them are laugh-out-loud funny. Some of them are just, like, they make you think, or they make you smile. Some of them are laugh-out-loud funny, some of them are just fucking, like, me falling on the floor laughing. But, you know, it's kind of hit and miss, or maybe not even that. Your mileage may vary when it comes to, essentially, the second half of the movie, once it becomes, oh, this wacky telethon. But I'll just say, for me, even independent of how much I respected this movie for its satirical bent and its intelligence, I mean, just the goofy fucking jokes are worth the price of admission. Harvey Korman is the host of the reality show, or of the telethon, rather, and he, like, just weird stuff, like, he's the lead on this TV show called Both Father and Mother, and they show the show where it's like a, I don't know, Courtship of Eddie's Father or something. It's like a single father and a son, but he's a transvestite, and then so is the son. And they show this beat, and, like, that's the joke, is that they keep switching back and forth between male and female. And it makes no sense, but it's just so fucking weird. And then he's a huge drug addict, and the telethon is gonna last 30 days, and he's got this briefcase full of, like, quaaludes and uppers and downers and shit, and then by the end of it, he's running out, and he's snorting the lining, and he's kind of going crazy, having a nervous breakdown, he's pulling his pants down, and through the whole thing, he's just this huge fucking Me Too event waiting to happen. They have this opening song, this opening number, where David Pomeranz, the guy who sang the theme song to Zapped, is in it, and they're singing this song called Gold, but then he's, like, molesting all the dancing girls that are coming around, like, every one of them, he's, like, either looking down their dress or doing something, like, it becomes a running thing, and just, like, stupid lines where, like, one of the girls will come by him, and he'll say, glad, instead of saying glad to see you, he'll say glad to see him, just shit like that. Harvey Korman being Harvey Korman is the point. if I had one major complaint, it's that once you do get to the various acts, I feel like they could have done a lot more. I think the problem is they wanted to kind of have callbacks. Like, they bring in Meatloaf, the actor Meatloaf, the actor slash singer, and he's, he's almost like playing his same character from Rocky Horror, only not undead. He's a daredevil who comes in because they're like, you know, we need to have a better act. Originally, they all they have is ventriloquists, and they have like a montage of ventriloquists, and that's because Fred Willard is trying to sabotage it, so he picks all these shitty acts. So they like Peter Reigart's like, we need to find a better act than this. And it's like what do people want to see? It's like, well, cars. Nobody has cars. Would they want to see those? He says, nobody wants to see cars. You're just showing them what they don't have. And he's like, well, what if we show the last car? And what if we show somebody killing it, destroying it? So that's it. They have a daredevil fighting the last car. And he's just, like, dodging it and jumping out of the way and beating it with sledgehammers and shit. And then they have another one. This weird fucking... And it becomes a subplot in the movie where... The character's name is Mooling Jackson, I think, and she's a Vietnamese puke rocker, which is a subset of punk rock that is now exists in the future. They don't define what it is, but she's this actress. I looked her up. Her name was Zane Busby. I've never seen her in anything else. Apparently, she went on to be a director, but it's the weirdest... Well, I can't say the weirdest, because I did watch Exterminator City. It's one of the weirdest non... puppet robot related segments I've watched for this podcast, where you see her musical number. I might just put that in as the little thing where I like the quote from the movie that I put in between the review and the pitches, because it's just so fucking insane. And the joke is that it's really bad, but I don't actually think it's really bad. That's another thing about this movie. The music is just so great. The soundtrack to this, I mean, not to mention Elvis Costello, Eddie Money, David Pomeranz, Beach Boys have a really good theme that begins and ends the movie. And that's another thing I want to talk about, the world building, because at the beginning of the movie, there's this, like, the opening credits, they have the Beach Boys song, and I think it was a new one at the time, and obviously nobody has cars, so they all have bikes, so they're on the highway, and it's just this sort of caravan of bicyclists, all, and like you would see, like, in a movie about New York, people walking on Wall Street, and they all have their own internal life and shit. It's a really cool image. It's a lot of the stuff they did to just reveal this future world is really cool. I feel like I'm all over the place. I'm sorry. I kind of get that feeling that I had after Big Shots, where I'm just really so excited to talk about the movie that I want to talk about everything at once, and I think that was kind of confusing. So I do want to go back, to Mooling Jackson. I think that's her name. Mooling? I don't know. She's supposed to be Vietnamese. And in this future world, Vietnam is like the vacation capital of the world. But you'll notice right away, she is in no way Vietnamese. And like they don't even make any attempt to make her look Vietnamese. You know, it's like, I was gonna compare it to Mr. Yunioshi, but at least they put tape over his eyes, you know? But this, but just the performance that this actress gives, it's like half brilliant and half like Tommy Wiseau terrible, and it's just fascinating to watch. I'm really sad that she never did anything else, because I kind of want to see her in other stuff. Like I said, she did some TV, but it's kind of just emblematic of the entire movie, the weird off-kilter sensibility that it has that I can't even really describe. You just have to watch it, but it's so much fun. You have to be in kind of a weird headspace, and I would say the same for... Like I'm saying, there are much better movies, but you know, something like Network, you can't just kind of go into that not knowing anything about it or not knowing what you're in for. Or rather, if you do, you might not be able to enjoy it or appreciate it as much as you would if you kind of were a little more prepared for it. And I would say the same about Americathon, though in a slightly different way. I mean, it's much more oddball. It's much more of a pace with 70s comedies at the time. I mean, I know it's late 70s, almost 80s, but... You know, it definitely shares DNA with stuff like In God We Trust, which I mentioned before. But at the same time, it's much more cynical than that movie. And that was a deconstruction of religion, and it had a lot of stuff about evangelicalism and a lot of really, like, dark, biting humor to it. But this, the whole sensibility of the movie, the whole kind of framework or perspective of the movie feels very much like, you know, kind of going back to Idiocracy, that, you know, there's kind of a happy ending, but... There really is no happy ending for any of these people. It's happy relative to how shit everything is anyway, and it's basically saying that the world as it is, the world that this movie is examining, is just as hopeless. And, I mean, I commended In God We Trust when I talked about it for that hopeful message at the end, but I kind of feel like there's room for a little hopelessness, too. I kind of like that, you know, this is just, yeah, this is what America is. Fuck you. You know, and it's depressing, but... so is our world today. And I think we need more movies like that. We need more movies to just remind you how shit things are. And maybe some people want to change it and make it better. Maybe some people want to check out and be apathetic. But, you know, all the movie's doing is just sort of laying everything bare. And I really enjoyed that. You know, it's like the very end of the movie, I'm spoiling this already, but throughout the thing, they keep talking about, you know, the audience, they want blood, they want violence. At one point, Meatloaf donates a pint of his blood to the highest bidder, and that gives Harvey Korman this idea, like, wow, what if we, like, killed somebody on TV? They'd really donate then. And that's when Peter Reigart's character is like, I can't do that, I can't be involved in that. And so, but it doesn't, like, happen, or at least they don't plan it to happen. But then throughout the entire movie, they've had this kid that was skateboarding across the country to presumably get pledges or something, to get money pledged, and they keep cutting back to him, like, oh, he's still on his mission, he's still coming, this hopeful American kid on his skateboard. And but even through that, it's like his dad is following him on a bike, and it's like this abusive father. But anyway, he gets there, he finally gets to the telethon, the kid on his skateboard, and he's like, he's come from the other side of the country, and how much money did you bring us, little Timmy? He's like, $38, like, fuck you, little kid. Just like, you tried to help in an earnest way, and it didn't matter. And that's the crux of this movie, is just like that kind of just subversive, cynical tone, and I loved it. And then, of course, at the end, the United Hebrab Republic comes in, and they're trying to kill... I think they're trying to assassinate. I can't even remember, but they end up shooting Roger Corman, so as he's dying, he's begging for pledges. Look, the light's shining, give... I loved everything about this movie. This was fucking fun. I'm looking through my notes now to see if there's anything I forgot. I just started writing down references to stupid shit. Like, at one point, they mention they're trying to find a host, and this Chuck Barris has a new TV show called The Schlong Show, where people just get rated on the size of their dicks. Like, that's the level of humor, and it's crass, but it's just smart enough that I still respected it. I didn't feel bad for laughing at it, even as you had stuff like that, or like fucking Sovereign toilet paper or Sovereign wipes. It's soft on the bum. God damn, I love this movie. That's a marathon. I got nothing more to say about this movie. Go fucking watch it. Watch it and just be gobsmacked by how prescient it is, how much it predicted about our modern way of life, and just enjoy the silliness. Because it's a silly fucking movie, and it's got all these great actors in it. John Ritter, Harvey Korman, fucking George Carlin. Everybody in this is great, and everything about this movie is great. Americathon. Go watch it. That's it for my review, and now I'm going to take a break here, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to have a 10-point plan for how to turn Americathon into a cinematic universe multimedia franchise. So stay tuned for that.
Anyway, here she is, straight from Ho Chi Minh City, her first appearance in America, Mooling Jackson.
To me, Yankee garbage. Don't you ever say no to me. This is why I'm gonna rock you, rake you, smack you, break you, and then kiss your honky ass. Bye bye. Hey man, I'm a lady. I can really get into the silly shit. When I get like that, you better appreciate it. Oh, I'm gonna light your cute little chest head. Watch them sizzle and burn. Want marshmallows on your anterior yarn.
Good God.
I'm white with fire. I'm wet with heat. I'm hungry for something. Oh, so sweet. Ooh, you do look good to me. Good enough to eat. Very many
that cute.
Lucy, don't do
that. I saw the way you were drooling
Lucy,
over her.
Come
She's
on.
She's an animal.
Let's not get
and
in.
You're an animal.
Lucy.
Forget it.
Choo-choo. Choo-choo train.
Woo-woo.
That girl is incredible. Get me a date with her.
And I'm back. And I have my 10-point plan for how to turn Americathon into a cinematic universe. And there are some of these where it just sounds stupid saying that. Like, no, this shouldn't have a cinematic universe. Like, the whole premise of this podcast is everything should have a cinematic universe, but even I have to admit that as much as I enjoyed Americathon, this was very difficult to expand. Just logistically, just trying to think of these, but morally speaking, I feel like it was good that this only had one movie to it. I feel like this is one of the few times where I'm like, I don't know, I don't want to see these. But I'm going to pitch them anyway, because that's what the show is. This is the cinematic universe for Americathon, and as I have to say at the beginning of every segment of these every week, the spoilers abound from this point on. I kind of spoiled a lot in my review, but if I have to spoil anything else, I think I've already done so, but spoilers abound from this point forward. I have to explain the ending of things in order to pitch the sequels and prequels and so forth, so if you have a problem with that, go away, see the movie, come back, and then we can talk about it. Also, I've got a website and an email address. If you found me on iTunes, as I imagine most people do, you can find me at my website, headcanonpodcast@blogspot.com. So that's headcanonpodcast.blogspot.com. And I have all the episodes hosted there. Also, if you want to email with questions, comments, insults, and so forth, that's spelled the same way. It's headcanonpodcast@gmail.com. headcanonpodcast@gmail.com. And mostly with the emails, I'm looking for requests here. I want people to come in and request movies for me to review. It can be anything, as long as I can afford it, and as long as it's not like a snuff film or something. You know, I reserve the right to not review any request, but I'm going to likely do it because I'm starved for attention. So send an email to that with your request or anything else you might want to email me about. And that's it for that. So I start off every week as I do with the sequel. Remember, it's sequel, prequel, spinoff, crossover, gritty reboot, TV show, video game, merchandising toy line, porn parody, and drinking game. And we start with the sequel. And for the sequel, I'm just saying we said it now, in 2018, so, you know, 20 years after the end of this, and we make it sort of, like, contemporary to the point where that's the joke. Like, I mean, we can, I guess, be a little more futuristic in terms of technology, but I don't even know if we would want to do that. I say we just make it the present day, and then the joke becomes, you know, how shitty our culture is now, and, you know, like I mentioned, the reality is indistinguishable from parody. Well, we just make the parody the reality. Donald Trump is our reality show president, and he gets the idea to turn the country into a literal reality show. In the same way that, you know, telethons were the thing in the 70s and 80s, reality shows are what we have now, and our president is just the same stupid dipshit, just a conservative stupid dipshit instead of a liberal stupid dipshit. So we have almost like a present-day mockumentary where what if Donald Trump decides to just turn the world into a reality show? And you can bring back the Peter Reigart character. He's the only one. I mean, John Ritter's dead, George Carlin's dead, but he's still alive. And maybe he's brought in as the director or the marketing guy for it, and he has to kind of question his value system. Does he really want to be a part of this? And, you know, I mean, if you want to make it, like, not actually Trump, like a pastiche of Trump, but I think the satire would have to be that. And again, when I say satire, you know, it's basically like what you get with Saturday Night Live now, where they don't even have to write jokes anymore. Whenever they talk about politics, they just do the things that they did in Congress or in the White House. And honestly, that's all I got. I mean, I told you these weren't going to be great, because this movie, while it was great, it wasn't really conducive to this process, but that's all I have for a sequel. That gets me to prequel, and this I actually would be kind of interested in, even if it wasn't necessarily connected to Americathon, just the structure of this I think I like, and because I mentioned how, you know, they lynch Carter in like the first 5 minutes of the movie, and they kind of quickly go over the history between 1979 and 1997. The movie takes place in 1998, so you miss out on basically the 80s, or this alternate history of the 80s, as our economy and our society was, I was going to say going downhill, it's going downhill now, where it was going downhill faster, or at least more publicly and less subtly than it has in real life. And so I'm saying you do like a mockumentary, like a Ken Burns style documentary of the 80s, but in this world. And it's still the same 80s, essentially. It's still all about like crass commercial culture, but because nobody has money, it's just really ridiculously cheap. And you would presumably cover the Eisenhower administration. They mentioned that the president before Roosevelt was named Eisenhower, and that was part of the reason why he won, is because it was just like, well, he has the same name as a president, so I guess that'll work out, right? So, you know, you have like the Eisenhower administration as a sort of a, like, this universe's version of Reagan, maybe. I don't know how you want to do as far as the politics of that, because, you know, like, it's so politically charged in terms of the criticism of the left in the original movie. And when I say that, I don't think that's deliberate or ideological or polemical in that sense. I don't think it's, you know, this was a bunch of right-wingers writing this movie. I think it was just the political sentiments of the time. You know, had this been made, you know, 10 years earlier, it would have been, you know, Nixon and Watergate and that kind of shit. Or I guess not 10 years earlier, but I'm saying if it had been made in the previous administration. And, you know, my go-to is Ken Burns, but actually now that I'm thinking about it, but I don't know if this is, I mean, Ken Burns is like a standard bearer for this sort of thing. Like, that's a reference everyone will get. If you have that voice, like, they did that Community episode where Keith David was the voice of the Ken Burns documentary, and, you know, like, you instantly got the reference they were making and what they were trying to do with it. So that's why I went that direction, but, and maybe what I'm thinking now is a little less iconic, but I'm thinking, like, if you do just I Love the 80s, like the VH1 show, but in this alternate history 80s where nobody has money and everything is shit, because, I mean, things were shit in the 80s. We have this, like, propaganda of the 80s as, like, this go-go economic stimulating time, but the Reagan era was fucking horrifying. I mean, the 90s were kind of okay, I guess, other than our president liked to fuck ladies. I mean, as opposed to now, where everything is shit and our president still likes to fuck ladies. But the Republicans are, you know, they're really good at propaganda. They're really good at convincing people that things are better than they are when they're in power and worse when their opponents are in power, even though it's often the opposite in reality. And that only goes so far. That's why you eventually get Democratic presidents and you know, Democrats take over Congress. But that's why you get those cycles, is because eventually people realize, like, oh, or at least enough of them go, like, oh, Republicans are fucking liars, and they always fuck up government. Why did we elect people that said their main goal was to not have government function? That seems ridiculous in hindsight. And then something happens, and we forget that, and we bring in Republicans again, and they fuck everything up, and then Democrats have to fix everything they fucked up, and then they don't have time to do anything good because they had to fix the mistakes of the last administration. But anyway, that's political stuff that I don't need to be talking about. But I'm saying, do it like an I Love the 80s style VH1 thing with like talking heads talking about this really chintzy version of the 80s of this universe. Or Ken Burns. Ken Burns is probably the better way to go. But anyway, that's my prequel. And that gets me to spinoff. And the spinoff I would have a lot of fun with as well. This, I'm saying, you take all the other characters that aren't Harvey Korman, Peter Reigard, or John Ritter. Basically all the acts. And you spin them off into their own movie where, you know, Americathon was such a huge success, and we've seen where all the other countries are like. You know, you have, you know, now capitalist China, you have the weird sort of resort Vietnam, you have the sellout Britain, and you get a little bit of Mexico, but you don't really get a sense of what they're like in this future. At one point, they buy San Diego as part of the raffle, as part of the telethon, but that's all you get with them. But I'm saying, you have all these acts, and they're invited by this international coalition to do International-thon, which is like a spin-off where they're on tour now, and they're going from country to country doing their same act. So you have Meat Loaf fighting the car, you have Moulin Jackson, the world tour, you have the skateboarding kid, and then you have Jay Leno, who brings his entire family along, because his thing is getting the shit beat out of him by family members. That's the end of that sequence, by the way. The mom wins and beats the crap out of him, kicks him in the nuts. And there's a funny fucking line. I mean, it wasn't funny, but it was just the kind of humor that I key into that's really on my wavelength, where she kicks him in the balls, and the announcer goes, oh, she clock-blocked him right in the family jewels. It's like, it's almost too dirty of a joke, but it just sort of straddles the line. But Anyway, he comes along and he brings his various extended family so that they can kick his ass on stage. And they tour the world. And you can have, you know, new acts, you can have international acts. Maybe you can even have a subplot where, like the CIA wants to assassinate foreign leaders and use this as a cover or something. I don't know how you would do that. Or yeah, maybe they want to kill or they want to destabilize the alliance between the United Hebrab Republic. Did I mention that there's a line in the movie where they go, and I did mention that. They got together because of their mutual love of world domination and their love of anything blonde with a nice ass. That's the line. And, like, this white woman walks by, like, a group of Jewish people and Palestinian people, and they're, like, catcalling her. And, I mean, that's not a joke that holds up today. I'm not defending it. But it's a kind of crassness that I appreciated. But more than that, it sent me down a rabbit hole. I now know what a POG is. Do you know that? I didn't know this was a thing. Apparently it's a thing in porn, and it stands for Fat Ass White Girl. Fat being P-H-A-T, presumably. But it's, yeah, P-A-W-G, POG. And that's, like, a thing. And I only bring it up because I just learned it recently, and it kind of offended me in a weird way. Like, I don't know why, but, well, I guess fat ass white girl, it's very dismissive of women and white women and girls, I guess. But more just the, like, and this is gonna get really oddly racial here, I should warn, but, like, that's always been the province of black women, hasn't it? The large ass thing? Like, that's been I'm thinking of, like, the Nicki Minaj shit, and, like, and it feels like co-option, doesn't it? A little bit? That, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but anyway, that was part of where my head was going because of this movie, and I'm just gonna stop right there. I think that's enough. I don't have anything more to the story, and I don't want to get in trouble, so I'm just gonna move on to number four on my list here, The Crossover. And I had a couple of ideas. My first idea was just have it be a Marikathon turn out to be a prequel to The Running Man, but I still need a story, and I don't really see the story there unless you just bring the, like, elderly versions of the characters into the Running Man universe, and I don't know what story you would tell there. So I kind of got even weirder with it in even more obscure sci-fi reference. And if you've ever seen the movie Robot Jocks, it's a Charles Band, I can't remember now if it's Full Moon or if it's Republic Pictures, or not Republic, Empire Pictures, but it basically the premise of it, and I'm saying that Americathon is a prequel to that, but we would get sort of the in-the-middle stage, where in Robot Jocks, countries fight wars with giant robots now, but in a contest format. So it's not like, you know, we fight wars with soldiers now. They have two giant robots, one representing each country, and then they fight, and whoever wins that war, or wins that territory, or whatever it's about. And it's like a sporting event. You know, people are even cheering. In the first scene of that fucking movie, a robot falls on a crowd of people and smashes them. So I'm saying Americathon is a prequel to Robot Jocks. And the way that goes is, you know, after the Americathon, they have to escalate things. They still have to keep people's attention. They have to keep people watching TV, and they keep the ratings up. I'm saying maybe they even introduce technology that is powered by ratings, and that's how you get giant robots in a country that wouldn't ordinarily be able to afford them. They're powered by the ratings of the people watching the giant robots fight. And maybe even, like, if the audience doesn't like one of the robots, they can push a little button on their Nielsen box and it'll get weak, you know. But anyway, they keep having to escalate for the Americathon, so they say, well, we're going to take icons of Americana and have them fight. We're going to refit them with robot parts. So we're going to have Mount Rushmore from the first gay state in the nation, North Dakota. We're going to refit it with, like, spider legs and make all the faces breathe fire and shoot missiles out their eyes. And then we're going to take the Statue of Liberty, and that torch is going to have real fire on it. It's going to be a flamethrower, and it can shoot spikes out of its head. And they're going to make them robot monsters and fight each other for the amusement of the masses. And then that contest ultimately evolves into what you get in Robot Jocks, where the international community wants to get involved, and they say, okay, now we're just going to pit robots against each other in order to solve our global conflicts, as inspired by this crazy fucking TV show we saw in America a couple of years ago, where the fucking Statue of Liberty fought Mount Rushmore and picked up the Washington Monument, and, like, one of them got impaled the other with it. But anyway, that's my crossover. I don't know if that's really, really dumb or not. But I think this whole podcast is really, really dumb. I have a sneaking suspicion that this is all for naught, that this is just the dumbest idea ever. And on that note, that gets me to number five, which is my gritty reboot. Again, not always a gritty reboot, and especially with the comedies, I'm saying probably not. But for this one, it was a little difficult. I mean, the comedies always are in pretty much every category, but especially in this one, and I had no intention of making it gritty, but just, like, thinking of a comic director like, I don't know, Jay Roach, I don't know who you would select for that, and finally I settled on, and this sounds like a weird choice at first if you don't know enough about his career, but Michael Moore, the documentary filmmaker. He's actually got a documentary out that just came out recently, Fahrenheit 11-9, which I actually saw. I very much enjoyed it. I haven't liked a lot of his recent work, but I think it's up there with his previous stuff with, like, Fahrenheit 9-11 and Bowling for Columbine. But anyway, if you don't know, that might seem weird because he's a documentary filmmaker and this would presumably be a narrative, but he actually does have a narrative movie that he directed. I don't know if he wrote it or not, but I know he directed it, called Canadian Bacon. And I saw it years ago. I don't really remember it. I remember kind of enjoying it when I did see it. It's got Dan Aykroyd and John Candy. I think it might have actually been John Candy's last released movie. The last one he filmed was Wagons East. That's the one he died on. But I think Canadian Bacon actually came out after Wagons East did. So it's officially his last film. But it's about these... It's a war that's, like, sort of concocted by the American president who's down in the polls, so he goes to war with Canada, and John Candy plays, like, this American patriot who wants to, like, go on a personal vendetta against Canada. But anyway, it's a narrative work, and it's very much like a political satire. So I'm saying if you're going to remake this movie today, have Michael Moore dust off his narrative film chops and make the remake to Americathon, but of course make it the right-wing version of it. Make it, you know, making fun of Trump and Republicans and how they're selling out the country and robbing us blind. You know, that's sort of the thing where, in the original movie, they talk a lot about the oil crisis, because that was going on at the time, but they don't really go into the more systemic reasons why our country, and I mean, we're not bankrupt, but the systemic reasons why, you know, income inequality exists, and we're in a precarious situation when it comes to booms and busts and possible, you know, great recessions, which we seem like we're on tap for now, because we're overdue for one. You know, and the reason for a lot of that is greedy-ass rich Republicans and just the 1% sticking it to everyone else. And I think Michael Moore has that in him, and I think this would be the perfect venue for that, to kind of take the elite class on in a way that I think more people might pay attention to, because, you know, nobody goes to documentaries anymore. Maybe you watch them on Netflix or you see them on HBO or something. But, you know, an actual comedy movie might actually be able to attach itself to the zeitgeist if it's good enough. I keep talking about this as if, like, if we can really pitch it to him, maybe he'll do it, and maybe it'll be made. No, but I'm just saying that would be my choice for a director. And as for the cast, I would say for the John Ritter character, for the dumb president, I'd go with Will Arnett. I think he can definitely play that sort of vapid character, basically just any of the characters he's played on Arrested Development or 30 Rock or anything like that. And for the Peter Reigart character, who I would also just have him be the narrator. I wouldn't do the weird, like, How I Met Your Mother disconnect where it's two different actors for the younger and the older. I would just have it be one character. And this is probably going to be very controversial. And I initially tried to think of an alternative, but I couldn't think of one. I was just thinking, like, who's the George Carlin of today? And my immediate thought was Louis C.K. And obviously, Louis C.K. has a problem with jerking off on ladies' faces, but he's also still a brilliant comedian nonetheless. And, you know, I feel like he's paid his dues. You know, he should get a comeback, right? He took a 6-month vacation, and his shitty, unwatchable movie that probably wasn't going to get distribution anyway didn't, and the show that he wasn't making got canceled. So, like, you know, I feel like he paid enough debt to society. He should be able to come back, right? He should be able to do comedy and also this movie. No, I'm of course being facetious and being sarcastic. I don't really have an opinion one way or the other if he does have a comeback or if people want to see him or not. I do feel like if he just springs himself onto comedy clubs, then anybody who leaves should get their money back. But other than that, if people want to stay and watch him, that's fine, whatever. But I also don't think he's paid his dues. He took a fucking 6-month vacation. It's fucking bullshit. But anyway, I'm saying he'd be good for that role, and I'm casting him in my movie nonetheless. And for Roger Corman, I'm saying, you know, Kevin Spacey might work, actually. No, I'm kidding. And if Michael Moore can't do it, Roman Polanski's available. But no, for the Corman character, actually, I was thinking we just go with a real-life late-night host, you know, somebody who has that sort of feel to him. I'm saying we make it Stephen Colbert, and, you know, him playing the character that he played in, of all things, The Love Guru, which is, you know, the one good thing about that movie is Stephen Colbert off in another room, away from all the action, I think just filmed, you know, completely separate from the rest of the movie, him and Jim Gaffigan just vamping and improvising, and, you know, just bring that character back, but put him in a good movie, this movie that I'm talking about. So anyway, that's my gritty reboot, And that gets me to the back half of this, which is all the stuff that isn't movies, starting with the TV show. And for the TV show, this is probably cheating, but I'm saying just do the fucking telethon. It's a month-long telethon, so the idea is you can do it as a season of a show, almost like super serialized, where it looks and feels like a real telethon. And fuck, I mean, go meta with it. Trump would do it. You know, this is, I'm assuming he'll be impeached by this point, so he's gonna need work, because, you know, he had to give all his money back to the government after all the fucking graft and violation of the Emoluments Clause. So, you know, he's gonna need to do something, so make him the host of this fake telethon for this fake Americathon show, and you do all the dumb acts every week. It's like a weekly variety show, sort of fake game show kind of thing, but in, like, presented in this sort of post-apocalyptic future. Ooh, you know, because it's not really a post-apocalyptic future now that I say that, but that's actually a kind of a cool idea, to have a game show, but the subtext of the show is it's in a post-apocalyptic future, and what the people are winning is, like, their freedom to, like get out of carousel or something, whatever, like, the sacrifice that they have to make, or maybe it's just, like, food rations or something, but, like, you know, it's they got this really dark undertone to it, but it's still set up like a game show, like a dystopian game show. That would be fucking awesome. But anyway, that's my idea for the TV show. Just do the telethon and have all the wacky bits, and have Donald Trump host. John Ritter doesn't host in the movie, it's Roger Corman. Have somebody host, and Donald Trump comes in, like, every episode to go, like, hey, donate to the country, and my pockets. So anyway, that's my TV show, and that gets me to video game, and this one I was like, there's no way I could fucking come up with an Americathon video game, that's insane. And then I thought of it, and I came up with something. And I'm just saying you do a management simulator where you're the Peter Reigart character, effectively, and you have to put on this show. You have to choose the acts, you have to, you know, budget everything, you have to set everything up and make sure it goes off without a hitch, and you gotta solve problems, you gotta spin a bunch of plates, and then you can also have the individual acts are sort of like mini games. I'm envisioning this as like a SimCity, like an old school Nintendo or Super Nintendo style game. And if you ever played like the Three Stooges game, where, you know, it was just a bunch of mini games, well, I mean, I guess there are a bunch of Three Stooges is probably not the best reference I can use for that. Like Mario Party would probably be better. But the Three Stooges game for NES, it's like you would have these various mini games that you would complete in order to earn money in order to, I think, save the orphanage. And so this one, you're competing just to save money to earn money to you know, hit the $4 billion target. And so, like, you have the, you know, meatloaf in the car, and maybe it's a thing where you have to, it's like a timing puzzle where you have to jump over it at the right moment or something. And, you know, the skateboard kid is like, you know, it's like a little obstacle course. And, you know, you can have a boxing match with Poopy Butt and his mom. You know, all the different, you know, gimmicky set pieces can be their own minigame. So that's my video game idea. I think that's pretty good, and I have nothing else for it, so that's that. So that gets me to merchandising, and this is another one. Like, the movie did this for me. They have so many good fucking cutaways to, like, dumb shit. Like, I keep mentioning Sovereign wipes, because it's soft on the bum. It's just the fucking image. It's literally a billboard with Queen Elizabeth holding toilet paper. It's so fucking classic. And then, but then at one point they talk about how the Indian guy made his money and was able to buy Nike. He specialized in shoes. First, there was a clown shoe craze, and then that eventually evolved into high fashion roller skates. And then you could have like the fast food restaurant Mal Burger. You can have like I said, Sovereign wipes. All the stuff they show in the movie is just rife for merchandising potential. You can open up Thatcher's Disco in 10 Downing Street. You know, all that stuff. So that's my merchandising. I got nothing more for that. Like I said, the movie did it for me. So that gets me to number 9 on my list, and that's everybody's favorite segment, the porn parody. And this is the segment where you know, I talk about how porn parody titles are lazy now. It's just like, you know, Americathon, a porn parody, or This Ain't Americathon. There would never be a porn parody of Americathon, but that's what I'm pitching here. But I want it to be a clever title. I want it to be imaginative. I want it to be at least some kind of pun of some sort. And for this one, I mean, I was kind of lazy here. I just thought, you know, it's Americathon, and we're doing the porn version of it, and it's a telethon structure. So it's the same thing. It's just people fucking and trying to earn money while fucking. So you just call it America Porn. I know, that's probably bad. Ooh, never mind. I just thought of another one. America Thong. And you know, see, and you know what I like about it is it's kind of innocent. It's not even like America, but with dicks. It's America Thong, like ladies in thongs. I mean, that's I think that's innocent now. Like, back when, like, the thong song came out in the 90s, you know, we were like, oh, he's singing about thongs. Isn't that dirty and provocative? And now it's like, that's, like, quaint. So I'm saying it's a, not even, like, a hardcore porn movie. It's just ladies in thongs. Maybe, like, American flag thongs, you know? Maybe we can get some pogs in there, some fat-ass white girls wearing American flag thongs. Oh, I'm jerking off already. So that's America thong. That's my pitch for porn parody. So anyway, that gets me to the last thing in this podcast, which is the drinking game. This is where I give you the all the points in the movie that sort of repeat over time that you can set your watch to it, but more importantly, you can do some shots. And as always, well, I say as always, as sometimes when I remember to do so, I'm going to preface this with a disclaimer. Don't try this at home. I don't personally drink. I don't care that you do. I'm not going to judge you for it. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. But if you do drink, please either drink responsibly or at the very least, don't try to blame me if you don't. This is all for entertainment purposes only. But anyway, this is my drinking game. This is where you should definitely, absolutely drink every time I say these things happen. But this is just for entertainment. First, anytime you see anything that isn't America, it's America-thon, but anytime like they go to China or they go to Britain or they go to Mexico or anything like that, then you take a drink. I'm saying anytime the movie predicts something about our modern world and you're like, wow, they were doing this in 1979? This is true today! Then you take a drink. And then anytime there's like a really fun fucking musical number, like I mentioned, fucking David Pomeranz sings the main one. There's a couple in there. I mean, a couple great songs. Elvis Costello obviously has a song. He's not just in it. He does play music. So anytime you see a really good musical number, or even a really bad one, I suppose, don't make any normative judgments about the musical numbers. Just accept them for what they are, good or bad, and then take a drink while you're listening to them. And so that's it. That's my drinking game. Sorry, this episode's a little light, a little short compared to some of my other ones. I think once I include the clips and stuff, maybe it'll be over an hour. I try to get these to at least an hour. But anyway, that's the podcast for this week. That's Headcanon. Thank you guys for listening. The only thing left, I was going to say, I don't even know if I... Do I preface this? Because this is the last episode of Season 3. I can't remember if I did this last time, if I actually told you what the franchise episode is going to be. You know, fuck it, why not? The franchise episode is going to be Phantasm. This is a five-part quintilogy, I guess, well, quintilogy assumes five parts, series. It's most famous for Angus Scrim as the tall man, and these floating orbs that kill people, and these little dwarves in black robes. And for full disclosure, I rolled a different franchise for this week, but I decided to switch it. I've been planning these somewhat in advance. I've been rolling kind of for several weeks ahead and several categories ahead, so I know what the next couple franchises are going to be. They're still selected at random, but this is how neurotic I am. Earlier on in this podcast, I mentioned Surf Ninjas, and I felt like that was just the fact that I had that referenced felt like it was a little too close to the franchise I was going to watch this week, which is Three Ninjas. That was what I originally rolled, so I decided I'm going to do that next week. Originally, Phantasm was slotted for next week, but after that, I want to be a little bit farther away from that reference to another kids' ninja movie before I actually do an entire franchise of kids' ninja movies. So it's going to be Phantasm this week, five parts, and then next season, at the end of next season, is going to be the four-part Three Ninja quadrilogy. I don't know why I keep saying the number of parts and then the thing that denotes the number of parts. I feel like that's redundant. But anyway, Phantasm is going to be the franchise next week. That's going to be fun for everybody, fun for the whole family, especially the murder. So that's the end. That's the end of the podcast. Goodbye, everybody. As Johnny Red always says, walk on water, eat bullets, and shit out ice cream. Can I vamp for another 2 minutes to get this to an hour? It's going to be over. Once I put the shit in, it's going to be over an hour. I shouldn't worry about that. But what Johnny Red just said, do that. Goodbye, everybody.